a game face on. Get ready for the tip off. First pitch, puck drop, first swing, kickoff. Now your regular sports show. We bring the realest in the world of sports. You gotta hear it, see it, and feel it. On field, on court, wherever you playing. Forget all the gimmicks, cause you speaking on the game. Wall Street Strickland, E-Sweets Watson. Giving y'all the latest in sports and what's popping. It's four quarters of absolute rawness. If you ever need support, knowing who's on the court, you call. From the pop fly save to the Super Bowl phase, it's from the first round seed to the top of the league, you know it's.
Are you ready?
Am I ready?
Oh, I'm so ready. I'm so hyped.
I was born ready.
We had a good little warm up. It was a laugh and a cry at the same time.
My feelings are so hurt, but you'll see it posted on our Facebook page about the legendary MC Slick Rick and his new acting career. Let's just hope he was acting.
You know, the funny thing is, no matter what we can say, no matter what, like, I heard about it, I read about it, I didn't
think. You shouldn't have told me.
I didn't know it was going to be as bad as it was.
Let's not blow it up.
Exactly.
Let them see it.
But we are back. All Balls Don't Bounce, episode 63.
Episode Willie Lanier. Episode.
Keep going.
Dermani Dawson.
Because we're in uncharted territory right now. The higher we get.
It's all like.
You know, like
offensive linemen.
Yeah, once we get in the 70s, we'll be all right.
The 70s and guys too.
70s and 80s will be all right. Between, you know, football and some hockey players will be okay.
Some CFL wide receivers.
Well, there you go.
They got those wild numbers.
Exactly. But
again, we are here. We are All Balls Don't Bounce. His name is
Dwayne Sweets Watson.
My name is Will Strickland, a.k.a. the Entrepreneurionaire, a.k.a. Mr. CID, Consider It Done, Wall Street.
Yeah, man.
That would be me. And if people didn't know,
if they just, by chance, some quirk of fate came across us.
They would come across us and they would understand that while we sit here and we kick the sports ballistics,
yes,
we do get paid for the use of our linguistics. Shout out to my man, Diamond D.
Every time you mention an old school rapper, a classic rapper, I'm nervous.
Why?
I'm just thinking about Slick Rick.
Oh,
I don't know if I can see anyone anymore.
Well.
But,
where we don't, they're going to see Slick Rick, but where can they find us, sir?
They can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/ABD Media, on twitter.com/ABD Media. Once again, iTunes Music Store, Stitcher Radio, or contact us. Mm-hmm. At allballsdontbounce@gmail.com. Or hit me on my Twitter @SweetsWatson, or him on his Twitter @WallStrizzle1.
That's
as in
right.
The number one.
That's right. That's right. I'm ready to get into this thing.
I know. We got all the particulars out of the way.
Let's do this.
All right.
It's strange to be after Thanksgiving and giving shouts out to Major League Baseball players.
Very strange.
For the awards. But we talked about this in the last show. It was kind of odd that they wait until 2 months after the regular season to give out regular season awards. It's something fishy about the voting, but whatever. It's Major League Baseball, and we're going to have a little bit to say about Major League Baseball in a second.
Right.
But shouts out to Miguel Cabrera.
Yep.
Triple Crown winner and AL MVP this year.
And we talked about this last show in terms of, like, you know, would they give it to him?
Between him and Mike Trout, who ended up being Rookie of the Year in the American League.
Not a bad consolation prize.
Yeah. He will definitely be an MVP. If he plays like this again next year or the next couple of
years. Many more years.
He's going to be there.
Yeah.
And shout out to Buster Posey from the San Francisco Giants, NL MVP, 25 years old, 2 championship rings on his finger.
Already.
They're already talking Hall of Fame for him. And it's with good reason. I mean.
Yeah. But, you know, the media tends to get a little excited over the little stories and want to make, you know.
The hype.
I'm not saying a story's not there, but best of all time?
No. Well, he's definitely going to be in the Hall of Fame if he keeps this kind of production up. Shout out to our man Joe Budden down there. In Tampa Bay.
Joe Budden?
Yeah, you didn't know Joe Budden pitched for the... Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's David Price. That's David Price down there. Shout out to David Price, the AL Cy Young winner this year. And also, we've already given a shout out to our man, the knuckleballer, R.A. Dickey in the National League.
Of course.
Manager of the Year, Bob Melvin, who did the most with the least, with the Oakland Athletics, you know, the money ball and all that stuff, Billy Bean. And Davey Johnson.
Old man Davey Johnson.
Yeah, the former captain, the chief. architect of that team in 1986 for the New York Metropolitans took the Washington Senators. I'm not going to call them the Nationals no more. Shout out to Harmon Killebrew, son. No, the Washington Nationals, to the best record in baseball, they had the NL Rookie of the Year, and Bryce Harper came in, fulfilled his hype, did his thing. So shout out to all the winners from Major League Baseball.
No matter when they're announced.
No matter when. glad that he's back up on his feet and doing well. We want to send a shout out to the coach, Mike Ditka.
Yeah, the big man.
No more brats, no more beer.
Yeah, he's got to change up your diet.
Yeah. We talk about concussions all the time. Is there such thing as a mild stroke? No, motherfucker, you had a stroke.
Yeah.
That's a serious thing.
Yeah, exactly. I think I'd only want a mild stroke if I was enduring it. But other than that, it's like an 80
one. Well, I'm glad he's back. I like the coach. So get well and get even better soon. Shout out to our girl, Tammy Sutton Brown.
Word up.
WNBA champion, Tammy Sutton Brown from All-Star, the Indiana Fever.
Champion.
Yeah, and
Olympian,
an author.
Author.
Yeah, she's an author.
She's petting tombs now.
Right. Hey, you know what? She's trying to do what Dennis Rodman does.
Or Amari Stoudemire.
Yeah, we won't get to that anyway. Quick birthday shout out to Amari Stoudemire. I mean, his birthday came up, but she writes these books called Korean Scooter. I guess, and it's kind of a play on her childhood. She has like little Afro puffs and everything as a kid.
Yeah.
And just teaching kids about different languages and different people and understanding that we're all people no matter where you are in the world. So shout out to Tammy.
That's great.
You know, and her doing her thing, trying to spread love like the ABDB way. And last but not least, Amina Hussein. You know who that is? Outside of her being super fine. I can't help it. She's a gorgeous woman. But she's talented at her job,
isn't she?
Without question. She was the producer for NFL Sunday Countdown for a while.
Right.
Got a new assignment. She's now the producer for NBA Countdown. So you notice that John Berry's gone, Chris Broussard is gone.
Oh, yeah.
Now they've added Jalen Rose, and they've added Bill Simmons. And for different reasons.
Did she have a say in the whole Van Gundy incident?
We're not going there.
And you're probably not going on the show after talking about her aesthetics before you talked about her skills.
I can say she's an attractive woman. That's not. It can't be sexual harassment before I'm on the job, dog.
That might not get you on the job.
It's a compliment. It's a compliment. But she's now the producer over there. She says she wants to make it less boardroom and more barbershop. Shout out to
I like that.
I'm with that. Happy trails to Fireman Ed, the Jets superfan. The New York Jets superfan Fireman Ed is retiring. But fuck is that?
Was there a lawsuit issue with the ownership issue, like the Clipper Darryl scandal?
I don't know. I don't think it will be, but how can you retire as a fan, dog? Like, really? Like, is that like a rapper who retires instead of rapping and putting down the mic, this motherfucker just stops fanning? Like, what happened?
Well, he's still a fan. He said that oddly enough, it was a ridicule he was getting from other Jets fans.
About who, though? Why?
Well, about Sanchez. And people thought that, you know.
Warranted?
Yeah, but
dude, did you see?
But hold on a second.
Did you see in the Patriots game where they tried to run a sneak and he ran into the back of his offensive lineman?
Yeah, that was very cartoonish. However, though, but there's fans who are criticizing him for, you know, supporting who he wants to support, and then accusing him of being like a paid by the team. And you know, dude, Fireman's been around forever,
even before he was getting paid. Because he probably is getting paid. He goes to functions and stuff, and he is the face of the Jets fans now, or he was before he retired.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate.
I mean, it's in New York City. You got to understand people are going to be cynical anyway
and
see through it. But he's been doing his thing for a while now. And shouts out to Fireman Ed, man. Enjoy it. Happy trails also, not in a happy way, to Marco or Darko. Did I just say Marco? I was thinking about Marco Yark real quick because he's married to Adriana Olima. Yeah. See? Now, how can you say it?
I'm not trying to have a business relationship with her. I like to have another kind of relationship with her, but not a business relationship with her.
I'm telling. But no, Darko Milicic, whose mother is very ill, asked to be waived. I don't know if anybody asked to be waived.
Well,
but he wasn't playing anyway.
Yeah, he wanted to go home and be with
and
his
take
mom.
Care of his mother. So they waived him, and you know his mom's been ill. They didn't think he's going to be back this year, so.
Is it really happy trails? I mean, obviously, you know, he's got family to take care of, but
happy trails. He ain't come back to the NBA. Happy trails to Darko Milicic. The unfortunate number, what number draft pick in the 2003 draft?
That was a draft. Dos.
Huh?
dos.
Yeah, and we're going to... I have not forgotten about talking about the number two picks in NBA draft history.
I just find it
funny. In a draft with LeBron.
Before you get into the two conspiracy theory, don't think it's over because none of us would have really thought he would have had a shot even getting a contract in Boston.
You can't teach 7-1.
And look at all the chances that your boy, what's his name, got? The mustache guy, Adam Morrison.
No, I'm not saying it is over. I just don't think he's coming back to the NBA. I don't think he's coming back to the NBA.
That's fair. He never had a great experience. I can totally see that.
And he didn't play that poorly in Minnesota last year, but I just don't see him coming back. Speaking of not coming back, we want to pour out a little fat-free water and what is that? Low sodium. Low sodium.
Apple juice.
Low sodium apple juice. Who puts salt in apple juice? But rest in paradise shouts to Marvin Miller. If you are unfamiliar with Mr. Miller, you're probably unfamiliar with every free agent who's ever come to a team that you loved, whether it be baseball, football, basketball, or any other major sport. The creation of the collective bargaining agreement was introduced by Mr. Miller, who was a labor leader in the United States and fought for the rights of the workers since forever. When he was working with the steel workers, and then he became the baseball. He and Curt Flood, even though they lost their case, it was monumental toward engendering some freedom of choice for players, first in baseball, and then you see other sports that had done it. Now, this is not to take away from what Bob Cousy and the Players Association did in the NBA years ago, but to the degree that it happened for Major League Baseball, where minimum salaries were such that guys used to have, you know, summer jobs for basketball and winter jobs in baseball.
Kind of like in the CFL.
Yeah. That now they're making huge salaries. And it's because of Marvin Miller.
Yeah, and his work.
We're going to put some stuff up for him, but we're pouring out a little bit for Mr. Miller. Also, pouring out a little bit for Sasha McHale, the daughter of Houston Rockets head coach Kevin McHale, who passed away just recently. And they didn't really give any details about what her illness was.
She was suffering from lupus.
Really? She was suffering from lupus?
Yeah, 23 years old, which is, you know, very unfortunate. And Kevin's been gone from the team since early November, I believe.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, her passing. So rest in peace.
Rest in power. And of course, rest in sequined power to one Hector Macho Man Camacho, who passed away after being shot in the neck and face in a car in Puerto Rico. Last week before last?
Yeah.
And they tried to keep him on life support. And I'm kind of familiar with this situation. I was kind of pissed also at Sports Illustrated for posting a picture of him in the hospital with all the tubes and stuff in him. I thought that was kind of extra.
First of all, you got to look at it's an editor saying, and it's a picture off the Associated Press photo. So it's not like they went and took the photo.
But they didn't have to post it.
No, you're right. But it's not that graphic.
I just think it's, I don't know. You think of the last memory of the people that you love. And I remember seeing my father, God bless the dead, in a similar situation. And I remember him telling me at 12 years old, if I was ever in a situation where I had to live by tubes and machines and stuff, you got to pull the plug because your mother won't. That's a hell of a thing to tell a 12-year-old.
Oh, for sure.
And so his mother, Hector Camacho's mother, having the strength to say, you know, I want to make sure the kids are here. My son has been dead for a couple of days now.
Yeah.
This machine is just keeping him alive.
And she waited till the rest of his kids can come see him before she pulled the plug.
Right. And I remember seeing my father, man, walking into the room after they had taken the tubes out and stuff. And he was just laying there and he looked like he was asleep. I'm like, get up, man. Let's go. But I knew he wasn't going to come back again. So... rest in power to Hector Macho Camacho. On a happier note,
yes,
we'll do some happy birthday shouts.
Quite a few.
The greatest guitarist who ever lived. Why is he on the show? This is all Balls on Bounce. We can talk about whatever we want to talk about.
That's right.
Jimi Hendrix, man. He had a birthday just recently. Bruce Lee's birthday, I think, is today or was it yesterday?
And if you don't like the fact we're talking Bruce Lee's birthday.
How can you not talk about...
We can give them a little...
No doubt. Oh, we could do it.
Exactly.
You know, because we want you to be Walter, my friend. Be Walter. If you don't remember the classic scene in Game of Death with him and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar...
Come on, B.
That's one of the most classic scenes in karate film history. But shout out to Bruce Lee. Berry Gordy had a birthday, just came up. A lot of people are like, why is Barry Gordy on the show? Again, we can talk about what we want to talk about, but Barry Gordy was a boxer.
Oh, were?
He was a boxer before.
Is that how he kept those artists in line?
Probably so. He was on some Ike Turner shit like anime. Hey, you better get in that booth. Yeah. But shout out to Barry Gordy, founder of Motown Records, if you did not know. Shouts out to Warren Moon and Doug Flutie, two of the greatest, if not the greatest, players in CFL history. Dwayne's beloved Canadian Football League.
Yes, sir.
Shout out to the natural Ken Griffey, who should have been so much greater if it weren't for those injuries. Michael Strahan, his birthday just passed not too long ago. Shout out to Michael Strahan. Billie Jean King and Boris Becker, two of the greatest tennis players of all time, born on the same day. So shouts out to them.
Hold on. Did you say two of the greatest players of all time?
Tennis players.
Tennis players of all time?
Yeah.
Like, definitively?
They're two of the greatest.
Okay.
Have you? I said two of the greatest.
Yeah, sorry. Thank you. Yeah, no, I'm good.
Oh,
I'm good.
I said greatest?
I wasn't sure.
No.
It's okay.
Dude, we hang with Martina Navratilova. What are you saying,
true,
son?
True.
What are you saying? Shout out to the big O, Oscar Robertson. He probably celebrates his birthday much like Kendrick Perkins does.
No smiles, no laughs.
He has no joy in his life, despite being one of the greatest basketball
players
ever.
One of the greatest.
Just like, you know, remember, shout out to Joe DiMaggio, who had a birthday. Whenever he was announced at a function, you always had to say, the greatest living player, Joe DiMaggio.
Always qualified.
Well, do we have to say one of the greatest dead players who ever played? Joe DiMaggio had a birthday.
Do you know why that was?
That was just his thing. Joe DiMaggio had his, you know, he had that thing for him. So, plus he sold Mr. Coffee, so you never know. shout out to John Amici, who had a birthday. If you're unfamiliar with Mr. Amici, he was a former NBA player, but he was also one of the first guys who played in the NBA to come out as openly gay.
I think he did after his career, but yeah, he was, yeah.
Yeah, and
actually the only NBA player.
Is he the only?
Well, that's
the only one that's come out. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's the only one that's come out. And the Jell-O is definitely jiggling somewhere in heaven's refrigerator for one Mr. Chick Hearn, who would have had a birthday if he was still here with us. So shout out to
Chick Hearn. Which I wasn't aware he's the guy who coined triple-double.
Yeah.
Yeah. Among other things.
Yeah. Oh, Chick Hearn is a creator. He was an innovator. He's like Little Richard. He was looked over.
Was he like a sin tactician?
No, well, I don't want to give him all that. As we proceed, what you need here on All Balls Don't Bounce, we're going to get into some pigskin.
We're talking on the gridiron.
Yeah, on the gridiron.
On the collegiate level, though.
Yeah, but see, college football is coming down to the end of its season, and I feel like I hadn't watched enough until the holiday weekend, because it's rivalry week.
That's the best time. That's what it's almost for.
But it seems like that. But with all these teams moving around and finding realignment and new conferences, it's always about the money around this time of year.
I mean, before we get right into it, it's kind of like we talk about rivalries and, you know, back in the day, teams were in conferences for decades.
Yeah.
And rivalries can build and fester and develop because and really mean something.
Right.
And now because of the money, teams jump from conference to conference. So you lose some of those great rivalries because...
This is what's happening with Notre Dame, who was never in a conference. They were always independent.
They could always...
But you knew that they played University of Michigan or they had the Notre Dame game, which helped them to go 12-0. Not the Notre Dame game. The USC game just recently.
Right.
They had rivalries that were set before that. They played, you know, the Army-Navy game or the Iron Bowl, which we'll talk about in a second, but Auburn and Alabama, Michigan and Ohio State. So all of these games meant something. But with all this realignment, and even though I want to send a shout-out to my man Rakim, sometimes elevation doesn't always necessarily come from expansion. If you know where that's from, let us know. Do you know? Constant elevation cause expansion. I write rhymes as I cool in my mansion. Come on, dog!
Know where that's from, let us know. AllBallsDon'tBounce@gmail.com.
No doubt.
Or hit us on Facebook. We'll post the video.
The most recent one is the Big Ten, which has how many teams in it now? 11, 12?
Yeah, not
13. Not 10 teams. So they might have to change their name soon. Have included or allowed the great rivalries that they're going to establish between the Rutgers Scarlet Knights of New Jersey and the Maryland Terrapins into the Big Ten. That's really not even about football, even though that's the reason. It's money.
It's about business.
It's money.
Yeah, totally.
They want to make that brand known in those marketplaces, basically DC Metro and the New York tri-state area.
Exactly.
Because almost more than a half a million of the alumni from schools like the University of Michigan and Ohio State live in those areas.
Right.
So, you know, you got Chicago, you got Detroit. The third and fourth behind them, like I said, DC Metro and New York, they want some of that visibility.
And another odd thing with the whole realignment stuff is
recruitment. They just talked about brand visibility.
Well, yeah, but the other thing is too is when they build these divisions, it's because they're geographically convenient.
You would think.
No, I mean, back in the day, that's when they did it. And now with the realignment, you just got teams going in different places just because of the money.
Why is Boise State in the Big East?
Exactly. Money.
Right. So, you know, I mean, great on them, but the kids get nothing. We know how this works.
Oh, yes.
We know how this works. But let's get into the rivalry. Let's talk about some football and the beef between Nick Saban and one of his former assistants, Will Muschamp.
Step up, big man.
You know what? I'm not mad at Muschamp for saying what he said. Or not Muschamp. I'm not mad at Nick Saban for saying what he said. The beef is really about the SEC championship teams.
Right.
Right. And what bowl games they go to. Now, traditionally, the SEC champion would go to, or the runner up or whatever, would go to the Sugar Bowl. That's always been. But again, with realignment and all this other stuff,
nothing is
you don't know because dollars are this, that, and the third. So Nick Saban was upset that the champion or the runner up to the SEC championship game wouldn't get to go to the Sugar Bowl because they'd already picked who's going to go to the Sugar Bowl.
Right.
If I'm not mistaken. Is that how that worked out? They locked in Florida, no matter what happens.
Right.
They're already going to the Sugar Bowl. And Florida had a great season. They were 11-1. You know, but I guess Nick Saban didn't like the way they did things. He wanted to realign the alignment.
He doesn't have that kind of much respect.
Yeah.
But he can't make that.
Really, it's just the difference between playing in the Sugar Bowl and the Citibank Bowl and the Meineke Auto Parts Bowl, right?
And that's now it doesn't even mean, like you said, with that example, it doesn't mean as much anymore.
Well, it's a matter of value. You know, whether you value gold or iron or any sort of precious metal. Speaking about Alabama, they just destroyed Auburn in the Iron Bowl, their traditional battle at the end of the season. Wasn't even close. 49-0. Gene Chizik, no job. Out of here. Just remember, just 2 years ago, he won a national championship with Cameron Newton.
But don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Word is
born. 49-0. Like,
it's not. It wasn't even competitive.
No.
But the interesting thing to me was the guy who, I don't know if he was either an Auburn booster or fan.
Oh, yeah.
Who offered, I can't remember how the offer went. What did he say? It was gold or something?
He was a jeweler, right?
Yeah, he was a jeweler, right? Yeah. So, and this guy was from Gardner. And shout out to our man, what was it? Magnum Prime, who shot us this story. Okay, so this guy who...
Jeff Dennis.
What's his name? Jeff Dennis. He owns a jewelry store. And...
in Alabama, of course.
Yeah. And he said, since Auburn didn't score a single point during the game, Dennis owes his customers a lot of money.
Well, he made a bet that they wouldn't, that they would score.
Right.
And they didn't score.
And some of the purchases were over $5,000. Wedding rings, engagement rings. Like, people took him up on this bet.
Yeah. So, it was between the 16th and 23rd. And he lost his bet.
Hey, he's got to give about 300 people refunds on that. It's going to be a serious Christmas in Jeff Dennis's house.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But good on him for owning up and living up to his bet.
In the spirit of college football.
Yeah, in the spirit of college football, what? Did somebody get a cut? What are you saying?
There might be an investigation.
Sooner than later. Right? Speaking of rivalries, and I spoke about this a little bit earlier, Ohio State versus Michigan.
Yep.
You know I'm a big Michigan fan. Go Blue. They were ranked. Ohio State was not. Ohio State won the game 21-26. The Ohio State University. With the state's highest paid employee as their coach, Mr. Urban Meyer. They are all dressed up with nowhere to go, Dwayne.
No dancing for them?
No dancing for them, even though they were 12-0. Perfect season. Like Notre Dame.
Oh, good old BCS.
Well, it's hilarious in that, well, it's not even the BCS. It's the TRESSEL.
Oh, true. I forgot.
Well, they didn't forget. They actually bought him out and honored him in the 2002 championship team at halftime of the game.
Isn't that kind of like bad form? Like, I mean.
Are you saying kind of for real?
It was more of a question.
Rhetorical?
Yeah. Clearly. It's like see this? This is why we're not going nowhere, even though we didn't lose the game.
Right. Right. Like, okay. What, it's the same thing we were talking about Duke and Lance Thomas. So they know that these guys on this team were probably getting inducements, but we're still going to honor them. We're going to forget about that. Shout out to Maurice Claret, by the way.
Where is he? What's he
up to? You know what? He's barely 30 now, which is sad to me because he's not even playing football. I don't know what he's
doing. I'm waiting for the 30 out 30 on him.
Yeah.
That'll definitely be coming.
Can we go north of the border?
So
let me hear you say it. Just say it one time. Just like the rest of the fans over there.
So obviously we know that on this show, we tend not to talk about the Canadian Football League for obvious reasons.
No, it's not that. We talk about it from time to time.
We do. So it's the 100th anniversary of the Grey Cup, oldest football league. When I say football, I mean North American football.
I was waiting for that.
In the world. So 100th anniversary. The Argos had a so-so season. How many teams make it to the playoffs, sir?
Six. How many teams are in the league?
Eight.
But they're going to add one next to you.
Who?
Ottawa.
The Rough Riders? Are they calling them the Rough Riders?
I don't know if they're going to call them the Rough Riders.
Anyways, so the Toronto Argonauts.
You should be up on that, Mr. CFL.
I know. Thanks for keeping me up on that, though.
You know I am the American Canadian now.
There you go. Toronto Argonauts made it to the Grey Cup game, which is kind of a feat in itself because they didn't have a greatest season, but they made it and they beat the Montreal Alouettes, who were actually favored to beat them. And they faced the Calgary Stampeders in the Sky Dome in Toronto.
Sky Dome! You went retro!
Old school, baby.
Yes, sir.
Last time that they won the Grey Cup was in the Sky Dome.
Yeah. Same building, new name.
There you go. Rogers Center, all sponsored money.
Yeah.
And they beat the Stampeders 35-22.
You know, I predicted a win, and I kid you not, I will show you the text message when someone asked me, what did I think the score of the game would be? I should be handicapping.
You should be playing ProLine.
Word.
Oh, ProLine doesn't do CFL.
Oh, really?
I don't know. Maybe not.
31-26 is the prediction I made.
Well done.
I was close.
Yeah, it was good. I actually was down there. The energy was pretty crazy.
Yeah, you know, that's how the ballers play. We're at the sweet spot. If y'all can see it, it's all lush and flat. You know, it's the palatial. It's not palatial.
No, it's not.
But it's still plush.
Yes.
And he's down there doing his thing.
Yeah, but congratulations to the Argos.
Yeah. I'm sorry. What's the name of the team?
Argos. That's what they do.
Yes, sir. So shout out. We gave a little CFL love, but let's get on the gridiron down south. It's nothing like Thanksgiving football in the NFL.
It's nothing like Thanksgiving in any professional sport.
True.
American Thanksgiving.
Yeah, well, yes. You mean varsity Thanksgiving versus JV Thanksgiving up here? Is that what you're saying? But the Detroit Lions, a staple of Thanksgiving. Dallas Cowboys, and oftentimes they end up playing either the Eagles or the Redskins, which they did. Mm-hmm. The Cowboys, no Romo, ended up playing and getting beat down by the Redskins, even though they made a comeback at the end. And the Detroit Lions played a new foe. They normally play like the Bears or somebody in their division.
Right.
The old rivalries, as we were talking about before. But they ended up playing the Houston Texans. Who? Houston, you know, the Houston Texans. They've only lost one game all year.
Yeah.
Or is that they've lost one or two?
They're doing their thing this year.
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember right off the top of my head. But the Lions should have won this game a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And during the course of the game, the Detroit Lions defensive monster on that line, Ndamukong Suh,
broke through.
Yeah, he was breaking through the line all day, chasing Matt Schaub all day.
Right.
Kind of flipped over one of the offensive linemen, and on his way down to the ground, his foot just so happened to graze the tenderloin area of Houston quarterback Matt Schaub. So he hit him in the Schaub.
It seems like every season we're having a discussion about.
Well, last Thanksgiving, Ndamukong Suh
stepped on the arm. That was on Thanksgiving?
Yes, it's a tradition. And they lost that game, too. It's like Lucy won't let Charlie Brown kick that damn ball, right?
All
right,
so let me ask you. Intentional, incidental, what are your thoughts on this? The errant foot.
The errant foot. Well, it's much like the Zapruder film and John Kennedy being shot. No, let me not compare that. Roger Goodell himself, Daddy Goodell, said he couldn't figure it out, so I'm rolling with Daddy. I couldn't figure out whether it was intentional or not. From different angles, one way it looks like he reached out and kicked him. Another way it looks like he rolled over and it just so happened.
Right.
But at the same time, what's foul is that he didn't go over to Matt Schaub. Just the guy code thing. And be like, yo, my bad, dog.
That's what, no.
It's a football thing.
I'm a believer in professional sports unless you're trying to hurt a guy. Like, I mean, there's contact that happens, especially in a game like football. But basketball, if I bump you and you fall, whatever, that's on you. I'm not helping you up. It's like, whatever.
But wait, if you bump a dude in the nuts, though, B. Like
but it wasn't intentional.
Oh, so you're saying it wasn't intentional?
I don't think it was intentional. But I'm saying if I'm getting tackled, falling down, and I hit you, it's like...
That's part of the game.
Yeah, it wasn't like he tried to kick him in the nut. I don't feel... Okay.
Well, apparently the NFL didn't either because everybody wanted to sue him. Or not sue him. But
and
I guess suing him means fine him because he gets fined every Thanksgiving.
And we're talking about this, but would this be a different discussion if it was a different linebacker?
Or a different lineman, period. Yeah, well, maybe. But Sue has a history, and he's being charged for that history.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying the guy's the same, but I do think he gets a bit of a bum rap.
He does. It's not tiddlywinks. And I think what a friend of mine would call the pussification of professional football happens a lot. You know, there's a lot of protection to the quarterbacks, but some of the stuff is out of bounds. I mean, they're really reaching. You guys can let us know what you think. We're going to post a video, of course, on our Facebook page, and you can find out when we do our footnotes. Ha ha. Got it? Footnotes?
Uh-huh. Kick him in the footnotes.
Yeah, kick him in the footnotes, son. But I don't know. I just don't think he was guilty of doing anything. But who are guilty of some things.
Plural.
Yeah, a couple of guys. And why is it all DBs? It's like Adderall or nothing.
That was a good one. I see what you did there.
You see what I did there?
I see what you did there.
Thank you very much, sir. If you haven't heard...
Eric Wright of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. No relation to...
Eazy-E?
Yes.
No, we're not talking about Eazy. But drugs had something to do with it.
There you go.
Eric Wright was the second cornerback for the Tampa Bay Bucs to be suspended on charges of illegal substance use and substance abuse policy on performance-enhancing
substances. Yeah. And not to be confused with the other ones.
Yeah, right.
Right.
The other one, you know who the other guy was?
A friend of the show, a friend of the podcast.
Of course a friend of the podcast, Akib Talib. Now in New England doing his thing. But what's up with these guys using Adderall?
That's the real question. Because it's funny how it's the same drug.
Well, and it's all cornerbacks.
The consistency is very weird that it's like the same drug and the same positional players. Like it's not like there's a running back in there.
Yeah, like, are we reaching on it? But it's just kind of a strange coincidence that not only did Wright get busted, but also two young stars for the Seattle Seahawks. Is one of my favorites, Richard Sherman, right?
Yeah.
He's about to be – they're appealing the suspension, of course. But I think it was Browner and
– Browner and Sherman.
Browner and Sherman.
Adderall again.
With the Adderall out in Seattle. Now, Adderall is normally used for people who have, I think it's a sleep deprivation thing, or ADHD. And Eric Wright said his was for a health issue. Well, why don't you specify the health issue, dog, so we can know?
Yeah, exactly. And maybe the other guys can take up that same health
issue.
Well,
maybe they will. I don't know if they've conspired to make sure they don't lose any games or any paychecks, but they've been suspended from the NFL, and I don't get the whole Adderall thing, but...
We'll find out next time. We'll see what's up.
Yeah. You know who was high on a natural high, though?
Who would that be?
Brad Keselowski.
Who the hell is Brad Keselowski?
Don't diss the black redneck, the rampant black redneck crew. Shout out to the crew. Brad Keselowski is the NASCAR Sprint Cup champion. And he's definitely an underdog. He defeated the five-time champion from the evil Hendrix Empire, Jimmy Johnson. And not to be confused with the
football.
The well, how about them Cowboys? The well quaffed. Oh, he is no hair out of place.
Never, even after the Gatorade showers.
Jimmy's hair was all. He always concerned about that hair. But this Jimmy Johnson was like, you know, he's the man. He was actually Bob Sugar in Jerry Maguire compared to Jerry Maguire. Brad Keselowski is Jerry Maguire. Right. He's the underdog. He gave one of the greatest interviews I've ever seen on sports television. Dude, he was so lit up and drunk, and he one of his. Of course, you see all his sponsors. Had this huge, huge glass of Miller Lite.
His sponsor.
Yeah, and he's drinking from it during the interview, and he even says, "Yeah, I'm a little buzzed right now," which is not good for drinking and driving. But I'm glad he's done driving for the day.
Exactly, and it's good for his sponsor.
Right, it's totally good for his sponsor.
Yeah, so it's like ask the question, and while the question is being asked, he's drinking.
Yeah, but it was so it was. But I think that was the thing is that this guy who no one knows became immediately marketable to a huge segment of the NASCAR fans, but also just regular peripheral fans who might not know, feel like he's kind of a down-home, real kind of guy that you can go up in a bar, have a drink, because he looks like you.
And also, he was just being a genuine, it was unfiltered. It wasn't the media boys, the cliche answers. It was like, I'm just genuinely happy, and I'm going to have a beer too. And celebrate, and I'm just going to...
That was more than one beer, though.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah, exactly.
That was more than one beer. But
and those are the moments you love in sports, you know what I mean?
You have to, man. I think we need to appreciate those more. But even... I don't want to say it's greater than Brad Keselowski winning the Sprint Cup championship.
No.
But...
It's definitely a landmark, though. And you know what? And it puts the block in rampant black redneckery.
Ooh, no. Because my man, Kip Diggs, a.k.a. Deacon underscore TKD on Twitter, sent us... This is why we do what's popular with the population, man. Our people send us articles. We talk about them.
Yeah.
They help us with the show together.
This is why we keep plugging it.
Right. Well, if you're unfamiliar with Antron Brown, we're going to let you know now.
Any relation to Megatron? No? Okay. Continue.
Can you put your arm back? Can you put it back? The reach was so dramatic. The reach was so dramatic. But, you know, he is the... He won NHRA Drag Racing Series Championship.
Okay, so...
It's the first time a black man has ever won anything in auto racing like this ever.
All right, so for the Canadian and NASCAR and unredneckery, I don't know this shit. This is the drag racing where they drive the strip and
it's the national like hot rods. Or
whatever. Got you. So it's not to be confused with like NASCAR and stuff. Like
right.
That. Got you. But hold on, I have a question, and hopefully one of our listeners can clarify. Where does Formula One fit into rampant black redneckery?
No, because they drink wine and eat cheese. That's like Brie or some other name that
but
we can't
pronounce. But
they're
competing in the States now.
Yeah, and they drive cars, but it's not the same. Like, they didn't come up from moonshine in Prohibition, dog.
They're so, not. No, definitely
you know, you're not.
Not
going to get, you know, Dario Franchitti, although he is married to Ashley Judd, so you might be able to get some of that hillbilly up in there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right.
We'll ask our crew, but shout out to Antron Brown.
Yeah, definitely. The first.
He's top fuel title. He was finally on the verge of winning his first NHRA top fuel title, and he ended up doing that.
Yeah.
All right. So, shouts out to him and our rampant black redneckery crew. Stand up.
Yeah.
We talk about some NASCAR, son.
There you go.
Always. Can we get in the ring?
Yeah, let's take it there.
All right. As we already said, Hector Camacho passed away, and if you didn't know Hector Camacho, and I thought Max Kellerman kind of OD'd a little bit on his eulogy to Hector on the last Boxing After Dark that was on, because while he was trying to give him praises, I think sometimes you can go too far, and he was like, in my lifetime, three of the greatest talents I've ever seen. He's in the top three of the best just raw talents I've ever seen in my life between Mike Tyson, Roy Jones Jr., and Hector Camacho. And I was like, dog, didn't you just say that about Floyd Mayweather 2 weeks ago? I'm like, yeah. You know, I understand I'm trying to praise him, but like, don't. It's like Sports Illustrated showing
that
picture
to me. But you know
what,
It's at the same time, though, it's kind of like, I don't want to say it's like music or subjective, but maybe he truly believes that. No, but you, I mean, I'm not saying you have to believe it. I'm saying maybe he believes that.
I don't know if he believes that. I think he was just overpraising him for what he's worth. Wow. But, and he did fight, like, for as much as people talked about Hector Camacho was a runner and he was all about the flash and stuff, he had some scalps on his wall.
Yeah.
He beat some guys. Of course, a lot of them were past their prime. But any guy who fights 88 fights and ends up being 79-6 and has 45 knockouts is not a bum.
No.
I mean, he beat Roberto Duran twice. He beat Ray Leonard, even though Ray Leonard was done, you know?
Yeah, but he earned his name, Macho.
He stepped into the ring. What do we say? The same thing we talk about on one-on-one.
When you put on the uniform, you put on the gloves, there's only one excuse.
There are no excuses. You get up in there, you expect to win, you get beat.
Yeah.
But he also fought, like Julio Cesar Chavez, he fought Felix Trinidad, he fought Oscar De La Hoya, all whom he lost to. But he was one of the first three weight class. Well, he wasn't one of the first. I shouldn't say that.
Easy telling him.
I know, right? I know. Thank you. But he was a three-division champion.
Yeah.
You know, so shout out to Hector Camacho again. Speaking of guys who are champions and moving on, who should have moved on a long time ago.
Right.
Ricky Hatton.
Yeah.
Tried to come back to the ring. And there was an interesting article that our former colleague, the M and WMD, put out, Mr. Morgan Campbell, put out there on Twitter today about conflation, correlation, and causation. Yeah. We actually named the show after that some time ago. And the connection between Manny Pacquiao and his newfound religious fervor. Same thing, and how maybe that makes him, it makes him tame. It makes him less a fighter.
Right.
As a result of, you know, being pious.
Right.
Which is kind of a reach to say that he can't honor God and be a fighter.
Of course.
Because there was all these articles or all these fighters that they talked about, you know, even Evander Holyfield, who had 52 kids out of wedlock or whatever, and all this, you know, all of this stuff. So you don't have to be a saint to be a fighter, but at the same time, can you be a saint? They were just really reaching a little bit, like you did earlier on the Megatron thing.
Thank you.
Yeah. And it was interesting because Ricky Hatton, who has documented trouble with, I guess, his post-fighting life. Yeah. Alcoholism, drugs, even thoughts of suicide had creeped into his life after losing two big fights to Floyd Mayweather and the aforementioned Manny Pacquiao, stepped back into the ring with hopes of competing for another title and went up against a serious opponent. He didn't come back for a soft touch. If people didn't know Vladislav Shevchenko, they should know him now.
Yep.
And Ricky Hatton came out. He had the crowd behind him, and everybody was amped up. And for the first five rounds, he was that dude. And Shevchenko had to know it. He's like, okay, you know, Hatton got me. He can't last that long because his body had taken a beating in those fights. He had been in wars.
Yeah.
Plus the drugs and the alcohol.
And being away and stuff. Like, he's not going to be, he's not fighting.
So as soon as he saw him running out of gas in the fifth round, and he started that body attack. And you know how it is. When you hit the body, the head's going to fall.
Yeah.
And Shevchenko got him, I think, in the eighth round or ninth round. Hit him in the ribs. You can hear all his air come up out of his body. The end. The end. I'm serious. Like, woof. That's how it sounded, B. And you can tell Hatton was still on the ground. The referee was talking to him. And he's like, you hurt his rib. You guys couldn't see me wincing now. But Dwayne could. And he retired again. You know how retirements in boxing go.
And it's probably going to be just as tough because, you know, it's like those fighters, those athletes who don't know how to adjust.
Well, he's saying that he's good with it now. The fire's not in his belly anymore. He can tell, but he needed to test himself.
Right.
And we hope.
Yeah, we hope.
That Ricky Hatton doesn't face the same kind of problems he had before. But hopefully he, you know, we try not to tell a grown man what to do. But stay retired, dog. Stay retired. It's some young guns on the rise.
Yep.
And
we're going to keep the old men out of the game.
Well, I don't know. Some old men in the game that can still do it. But these young guns just had a big fight this past Saturday. Mm-hmm. Robert the Ghost Guerrero versus Andre Berto. Right. Now, for peripheral fans, they might not have seen this as an exciting fight. They're not the hugest names in the world. Berto's a champion. Guerrero's been a champion before. But they were fighting at 147. And it was a definite brawl.
Yeah.
It was funny to watch Berto come out and try to mimic what Floyd Mayweather and Adrian Broner did with the defense. Andre Berto never been a great defensive fighter. What are you going to try to do a shoulder roll for? and Guerrero took him out of that in a hurry, knocking him down early.
Fight your fight.
Be who you are.
Exactly.
Right? Hard to play, change a player's game in the ninth inning, right? Yep. Word to Sean Corey Carter. But they ended up fighting in the phone booth the whole night. Mm-hmm. Great inside fighting. Guerrero got him early. Berto showed a lot of heart that I didn't think he had. He was hitting Guerrero with some savage shots. But at the end of the day, I scored the fight 116, 111 or 110 for Guerrero, who now has an opportunity to do a dance on Cinco de Mayo on May 5th with one Floyd Mayweather, who always likes to pick partners to fight on Mexican Independence Day.
Always.
Right? And Guerrero is...
He's got that uniform. You can wear it like, you know, the costume.
Hey, it is what it is. Berto definitely showed well. They're talking about doing a rematch, but there are bigger and better things. Guerrero even called out Floyd. Everybody calls out Mayweather because of what?
All roads lead to Floyd.
Yes, they do, because if you want that check, that's where you got to go.
Money team.
Yeah. So, you know, he calls out Floyd. And I think Floyd's not going to make a decision until around December 9th or December 10th. You know why?
Because there's a fight that happened around that time.
Oh, December 8th, Manny Pacquiao and Juan Manuel Marquez get together again for the
16?
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Right, yeah.
16 divided by 4.
4.
the fourth time they do the dance to define who is actually the
definitively?
We would hope.
Yeah.
Both of them are talking about knockouts. We'll see if somebody's going to step out of their discipline and do something. And people are saying that because Manny Pacquiao couldn't knock out Timothy Bradley, he of no knockout power whatsoever, that his religious conversion and his, you know, getting away of all the vices and stuff has made him a softer fighter. We're going to find out.
Well, is this like this whole religious, conversion, the whole, are they trying to set up an angle or excuse for this defeat? Because before this story came, but even when we had Yvonne on the show, we knew what was going to happen. We know what's going to happen. We saw what's happened in the previous
Well, didn't we talk about the setup? Yeah.
Exactly. So is this a setup to say that, are we going to knock a man for his faith in the Lord that's going to take him away from his fighting?
I don't know. I think it's a jinky problem. That's his wife's name. She said, hey, you better get it together, Manny. You see all this money? Half? No, I'm just playing. Let's stop. I don't know what their domestic bliss is like, if there is some. But he fights on the 8th. They fight on the 8th. And I'm sure that Floyd's going to make his decision, whether it be Saul Canelo Alvarez, mm-hmm. Robert Guerrero, or Manny Pacquiao, who, if he loses this fight, definitely is not in a position to ask for 50-50 split with Floyd Mayweather. He wasn't before the fight.
Yeah. And the funny thing is the desire and demand for this fight. If Pacquiao loses... Marquez.
It's still there. People want to know. Whether it's waned a bit, people are still going to watch it.
People will watch it, and Floyd will control the money, but I don't think the excitement is going to be as strong.
Well, let's see if it happens, because you never know. It could be someone else who steps in. Mayweather's clone could step in there and end up fighting Manny Pacquiao and Adrian Broner, who he is basically a Floyd Mayweather clone. 23-year-old, jumped up, and took the lightweight championship from a very tough Antonio DeMarco. I mean, he schooled him.
Yeah.
In his most recent fight. Knocked him out in the 8th round. Technical knockout. Just the sustained body work. And his willingness to stay in there and work inside. And I said this earlier. You know, his ability to work from the basement to attic and back down. Hit him in the body. Go to the head and back down. And staying in there close. Playing, you know, enough defense not to get hurt seriously. And basically try to swim without getting wet, showed a lot of skill and a lot of heart for a 23-year-old boxer. I was very happy with what I saw.
You know, he doesn't fight like a 23-year-old boxer.
No, and he's put himself in position to start naming his tune, too.
And he's also put himself in a position to get ridiculed.
Well, people are going to ridicule him anyway. His out-of-ring stuff is kind of corny.
that's more where I'm getting at. Because you can't really criticize his ring game as much as...
No, but, all right, so here's the dilemma that he faces. And Floyd Mayweather faced the same thing. When he was Pretty Boy Floyd and trying to stay humble and nothing, it was guys who were worse fighters making way more money and getting more visibility.
Yep.
When he turned into the bad guy, he ends up being the world's richest athlete in Forbes.
It's kind of like the, it's, it's, that entertainment. People want that show part of it all too, right?
But it, they, people come out to see him lose too. And they're going to do the same thing with Broner.
It's polarizing, right?
Yeah, well, that, and that's great. Because for sport, especially in the world of social media, where now the fans can make their voices even more heard and more vociferously heard, then it adds to the excitement and the dollars that could be had there. So Adrian Broner throws his name into that. You know, does he, if he, Marquez beats Manny, does he fight Marquez? Does he fight Manny? Will he step up and fight Guerrero? He can carry 140, 147 easily. And then at the end of the day, of course, all roads, as you said before, lead to Floyd. So there are a lot of good fights looking. I'm hoping that they happen in 2013 because there's not a lot of time left between Manny and Floyd. And we got to look at these new guys and Guerrero and Broner and Lucas Matisse. And these kind of guys in between 135 pounds and 147 pounds are serious, including this kid, Keith Thurman. Well, I didn't talk about him real quick, but he knocked out former champion Carlos Quintana. And he's a beast. He's a monster. I could see him fighting somebody like Miguel Cotto next year.
Well, 2013 is going to be a big year for boxing.
Ooh, I can't wait.
Lots of fights going on.
Ooh, 2013. Is that a year or how many points Jack Taylor scored in that college game?
Maybe how many shot attempts he took in that game?
Word to Kobe. You knew I was going to do it.
Of course.
You knew I was going to do it.
If you've been living under a rock.
Yes.
Jack Taylor set an NCAA record. Played Division III ball. Scored 138 points in a game. Now, his team
won.
It's
a 40-minute game.
179 to 104.
And he played 36 minutes. He shot 108 shots. That even made Kobe's elbow tired watching it.
Yeah, he shot 108 shots. Now, I don't know any games where teams...
They don't. Not anymore. Shots. The 108 shots. So, you know what? The other school had to be in on it. I don't care what anybody says. Well, you let a dude get up 108 shots on you, you're running down and you're just throwing the ball at the rim and giving it back to them or letting him shoot because you want to see him break the record. Well, there's no other way.
I was on with Hayes on TSN 1050, and it's like, we're just saying, you know, is this guy Teen Wolf? Like, I mean, what kind of
Michael J. Fox in the house.
But it's like, you're right. And yeah, we're saying, like, first of all, his team has to be in on it because you don't, like, you know, you got to be saying we're going to send you 108
shots,
okay?
Dude.
But you look at when Kobe Bryant went nuts on the Raptors, dropped 81, 82 points, what it was. And there's criticism, and, you know, why they didn't do anything. And Jalen Rose talked about it. But when let's say when he's got 70 points, if I'm on the other team, either we've got to be talking about double or triple teaming.
Some of them, they were. You know what? Fuck a double or triple team. Punch him in his nuts.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Take the technical.
Take him out.
Not that we're advocating violence.
Of course not. But, I mean, like, is this guy stepping in bounds and then shooting?
Dude, I'm telling you, the announcer, even though the coach had been on many interviews after it and said, no, this wasn't set up, the announcer before the game said that he was going to go after the record. So the teams had to be involved in it. But here's the other part. There's a kid on the other team that scored 70 points.
What?
And he was far more efficient. He was 34 for 44 from the field.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
So,
they were in on it.
It was a setup. They got their little 5 minutes of fame.
It was a setup to get wet up because his next game, he didn't do that at all.
I think the other kid got 71.
Yeah, the other kid on the other team he was 34 for 44 from the field.
Ooh.
Come on, B. That's some good shooting.
Yeah, but come on. Yeah,
I'll take 70 from him.
No, B. What bothers me is, and you just proved it, is set up that, what does it say about the game? Like, I mean,
they're disrespecting the game like it's some carnival shit.
They're disrespecting the game.
Break a record.
It's like, okay, well, you know what? Hey, let's set a record, and you guys, we'll just have a shootout, and, you know, you figure out who's going to do on your team, and we're going to shoot and not play defense. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, well, he shot enough shots. Like I said, 108 shots to score 138 points. I ain't impressed. Fuck out of here. Like Eddie Murphy said to Stevie Wonder, I ain't impressed with all that singing and shit. Yeah, you want to impress me? Take the wheel.
Well, man.
Somebody.
I see what you did there.
It was freestyle. My word is gone.
Follow through, my friend.
Do. Well,
speaking of taking the wheel.
Taking the wheel. Former Olympic champion and WNBA All-Star Shamequa Holdsclaw, one of my favorites back when she played in the University of Tennessee. And also somebody who has been, you know, the face of depression and mental disorder in sports. She's been really a big advocate for people talking about it and really getting help for it.
Yeah.
From her own issues and things that have happened in her past in New York City. was arrested for
what?
Assault, for damage of property, and it could have been attempted murder had the car blown up that her former girlfriend was in. Because not only did she break the windows out, but the reason that, what was it, Jennifer Lacey, was it?
Yeah.
Jennifer Lacey, kind of cute, the one.
Yo, I said that in the green room. I said that. I was like, who was also a WNBA player.
They played on the Atlanta Dream together in 2009.
Yeah.
So apparently that was Holtz Claw's former girlfriend. She went to go check her. She didn't like something that was said. She broke the windows out. And apparently she doused the inside of the car or something with gasoline. Come on, man. That's not the game to play.
Well, it's like we kind of talked about last episode. We talked about Royce Wade. It's just like, you know, mental illness is not just like, oh, whatever. It's not like a joke.
No.
You know, and it's unfortunate because, you know, she had a great storied career and, you know, she's catching a charge on this one.
Oh, she's definitely going to catch a charge on that. But it will tell you, and it is to some degree confirmation that it's not just men who fall prey to the power of the PU. You know what? We should talk about something else.
Let's talk about, there's a study recently conducted.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to figure out who did the study, but the study basically said...
Well, it was done by Christopher McGee, who was in the Department of Economics at Bucknell University.
Thank you, sir. That's why I'm here.
Uh-huh.
And it talked about race bias in NBA coaches.
Now, what does that mean when you say race bias?
The propensity to play players of your own race over other races.
Okay, so the NBA has more black coaches than any other league in basketball. That is 78% black. So isn't that kind of skewed?
Well, they did it from the period between 1996 and 2004.
Same thing.
And the study found, using performance statistics and player fixed effects, that they estimate having the same race as the coach increased playing time by between 45 and 55 seconds per game.
Ooh, that's a dramatic average. 45 to 55 seconds? Somebody needs to call an inquiry into the conspiracy to play more black players as opposed to other players in the NBA.
Well, there's good news, though, because it was relatively strong in the late 90s, but it has since declined some since then.
Oh, it went down to 30 seconds?
Well, you got to realize that Eric Spoelstra doesn't have any Filipino players to play, so he has to play with black players. But if he did, he would play them.
He probably would.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. Yo, but it does bring up something interesting, and we talk about this from time to time, whether it's on the show or not. Is kind of this black protectionism thing, right?
Uh-huh.
And I'm pretty sure that people know that you're black and I would happen to be black.
Well, our pictures are on Facebook, so they've seen it.
Absolutely.
On the ABD page.
And I hate to make generalizations, but there was a crew on the Shadow League who we saw the story on the shadowleague.com, and they got together and they talked about the Monday Night Football game.
Uh-huh.
Even though Michael Vick didn't play, he is still a quarterback on the very poor Philadelphia Eagles team. We'll get to them in a second. And Cam Newton, who for most has experienced a sophomore slump, had his best game of the season against the Eagles.
Right.
That's not hard to do right now, but it's not like the Carolina Panthers are great either. So,
right.
And this idea of black protectionism where, you know, no matter what a black player in any sport does, that we champion them in our community, whether it be through the black media or just large numbers of black people in general, well, like try to take care of them. And is it because of a history of bias, or is just, well, I'm voting for Barack Obama just because he's black?
Well, I'm not going to go that far, but I mean, I know, like, I grew up and my mom was a really big sports fan. And, when she first came to Canada, from England via St. Kitts,
the swishing and dishing.
She got into football, and she also got soccer, football. She came to Canada, she got into football.
Okay.
I said via England, so I would have said.
Okay.
Right? Thank you for clarifying for them, though.
I must.
And she got into CFL football.
Okay.
And she gravitated, she didn't really know a lot about the game, but she's like, oh, well, whoever's the black quarterback's team I'm going to go with.
Right.
Right? Because that's just what you did. But I don't think, you know, but then obviously if you understand,
But why did she do that, though? And this is the question.
Exactly.
Why did she pick the team that had the black quarterback, which is probably every team in the CFL back then?
Back then. Even back then.
So,
But there's more. Well, really, so, but okay, let's compare that versus NFL, because NFL there wasn't a blog. So, so not that she was more of a CFL fan, but she still is to this day. But because you can identify with them, right?
Identify in what way? Did she play football?
No.
So you're saying she's identifying on a cultural
standpoint.
And from a race standpoint.
Yeah, and also I think the assumption, which I'm totally assuming from my mom right now, is that, you know, if a team is going to have a black quarterback, that team's obviously forward-thinking enough to allow a player who's probably equal or greater or...
So I'm playing devil's advocate real quick, because we gave Skip Bayless the business a while back when he was talking about Kirk Cousins versus Robert Griffin III early on in the preseason.
Okay.
Remember that?
And they're saying that the white fans
should root for Kirk Cousins, or they were rooting for Kirk Cousins, and the black fans were rooting for Robert Griffin III.
Right. However, though, this whole sample that I'm giving you is when she wasn't familiar with the game. Now my mom knows fucking CFL and NFL inside and out, and she's not going to pick Cam Newton because he's black.
Well, we blasted like Toure and guys like that who said, if Tom Brady, you know, if Michael Vick were white, to naturally assume that his mind state, his cultural likes, all of that shit would stay exactly the same if his skin changed is an asinine thing. And there's no methodology, no scientific basis for that. And I think in a lot of ways, this is more of a cultural thing than a scientific thing.
And
I say black protectionism.
Right. But maybe it's more on a casual level, because if you go back to the example, when she wasn't informed, that's what drew her to it. But when she was informed, she could make her own decisions.
But what about the people who are in the media?
Right.
Who you see do it, who are, to some degree, you would hope,
informed,
who do the same thing. Like, I'm not going, if you're not competent, I don't give a fuck if you're polka dot.
Exactly.
I'm calling you out.
Straight up, exactly.
So if Michael Vick is whack, I'm calling him out. But if Michael Vick's offensive line is terrible, and his fucking fat head coach and doofus as offensive coordinator are so fucking stupid they can't call plays for the personnel that they have, and it endangers their quarterback, I'm going to protect Michael Vick because it's not all his fault.
But that's not even protecting. That's just calling, addressing the problem.
Right. Okay. Right? So there you have it.
Yeah. So, I mean, but people would like to say it's protectionism because
is that like the person who says, when you say something is racist and they try to tell you that racism doesn't exist because they've never faced racism before? Motherfucker, what? Anyway, that's a whole nother can of worms. And we definitely want to talk about that. We're going to post this on the website, and we'd love to get your ideas and thoughts.
Because some people would try and accuse us of protectionism.
I'm cool with that.
Cool
with that. But let's go into the National Basketball Association. If you didn't know, the first person to ever be fined under the new rule for flopping in the NBA, Reggie Evans, saw Houston Rockets power forward Patrick Patterson get warned for a flop the other night. Said, man, you ain't even close.
Yo,
did you see the flop? We're going to post it.
I saw it. He was miming, yo.
Money, he was already on the floor before it happened. Dude. Like, he anticipated the contact. That was kind of like the time when we had first moved to Texas. And my father, God bless the dead, told us after we got kicked out of the pool. We were at this hotel. We were staying in a hotel. And me and my brothers, we were in the pool. And this lady got us kicked out of the pool. She said, there's some foul-mouthed hooligans in the pool. So we get up in a room. My father's like, hey, don't go nowhere else tonight. So we got in the room, and I was like, I'm hungry. My little brother goes, Dad said don't go nowhere. I'm like, shut up. He's not going to get nothing.
Does he still sound like that?
No.
Okay.
But we saw Little Caesar's Pizza across the street. You know, they got the cheap pizza, and they got the crazy bread.
Exactly.
But we also saw, like, the street where the prostitutes were when we were coming in. So we said, all right, we're going to go outside. If you don't go, you're not getting none.
Right.
We're not bringing you back no crazy bread. Because we only had, like, $4 between us. So we go. We see the prostitutes real quick. Then we go over to Little Caesars. We come out of Little Caesars. Fire trucks and shit are everywhere at the hotel.
Oh, shit.
So we're like, oh, shit. And then people are coming out of their rooms. So we try to run around the back.
Right.
Right. Because it wasn't like the go inside super great hotel. It was a, you know, Red Roof Inn or some shit.
Right.
And we get upstairs and I'm like, be quiet. Be quiet. Don't say nothing. And as I walk in the room, why do I bump into something breathing? Yeah, it was my father.
Oh, yeah.
In the fucking dark.
Oh, man.
And he turned on the light. And he's like, hey, my man, didn't I motherfucking tell you? Like, and he was good for the no-look punch. Right. So if he was looking at me,
right,
I could already see my brother Chris seizing his chest up.
Because he knows.
He's about to pop somebody with the no-look punch.
Right.
Right? So he told us not to go out or nothing. And I knew he was about to hit me because he was looking at Chris. So I'm trying to tense up. So I'm tensing up. And as soon as I see it coming, I'm falling down like Patterson. But the worst part is, you remember the little boxing, or not, the clowns? It was like the little punching bag clowns. Oh, they had the sand or the water in the bottom.
So when you punch it, it rolls back up.
Yeah. I was doing like that, right? I was about to do that because as soon as he punched, like, he grazed me and I was falling down. But as soon as I was about to hit the floor, he's like, get up, motherfucker. And my back never touched the floor, son. I was looking like Michael Jackson in the video.
And are you okay?
Money. Yeah. Dwayne, I'm not, my brothers will tell you. Didn't hit the floor. He's like, get up, motherfucker. I'm like, boom. I was up and I was waiting for him to hit me again, but he didn't.
Oh, okay.
So the best part was, he opens up the crazy bread. He sniffs it. He licks one of them. He throws it back in the bag. I'm like, you motherfucker. I love your style, though. I was mad. Then as he's walking out of the room, he drops the bag on purpose by accident and stomps on it. Marinara sauce everywhere. Crushes up all the bread. And he said, leave again. And he left. I was like, man, I'm going to try and find one he didn't step on.
what about the fire?
There was no fire. It was just an alarm. Oh. So I pulled the alarm.
Okay.
That's how he knew we were gone.
Right, because he was checking you guys.
Right. So... Ooh. Patrick Patterson, you got a whole lot of burn based on my story about getting knocked out by my father when I was a kid. But the way he felt, and we're going to show you this video.
Patrick Patterson, some crazy bread.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
So give me some crazy bread, Patrick Patterson. Memphis Grizzlies, number one team in the NBA.
Without question.
Great story on Grantland by Jonathan Abrams about the two lives of Zach Randolph.
Yeah, that's a great story.
Yeah. Zach Randolph had a great quote the other day when they played the Cleveland Cavaliers. He was given Anderson Varejao props. And you know Varejao, Varejao, nonstop motion, man. He's got a great motor. He reminds me a lot of myself. I just had to laugh.
In what regards?
Yeah, I'm saying, like, what way? Like,
but I'm glad that Zach gets a story like, and we're going to post the Granite story too. Because he you know what? Like, he had a bad rap.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also, he hasn't waned into his performance on the court, and he's not... He's just that guy.
He is, what I mean? The only reason that the Memphis Grizzlies, and let me not say that. Let me change that. He is the primary reason why the Memphis Grizzlies are who they are and can play the way that they play.
Mm-hmm.
Because with a healthy Rudy Gay, with a Mike Conley, and we talked about this, staying pat and keeping that team, he and Marc Gasol are probably the best inside duo in the NBA right now.
Yep. Oh, for sure.
I can't name one any better at that size. It's not his brother Powell and Dwight Howard.
Yeah.
It's those guys.
Yep.
And so the Memphis Grizzlies, who get, I guess, a little snack tonight at the Grindhouse as they play the Toronto Raptors, eating some dinosaur meat, are still the number one
team. Are going to keep up their winning ways.
Yeah.
For a while.
And so I'm looking forward to seeing them in the playoffs, and I hope they stay healthy all year.
You know what's funny is that Zach Stott, before he was in Memphis, was in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
He could have been their power forward. He's still doing his thing right now. But now they have Amar'e Stoudemire.
I'd love to say that New York City and Los Angeles are no country for old men, but that's all they got in their lineups.
Ooh.
You like that?
Ooh, yeah.
That's true, man. You look at the situations both in L.A. and in New York with their power forwards, Pau Gasol, and with Amar'e Stoudemire, who should be coming back at some point. The Knicks are playing fantastic basketball with Carmelo playing the four. And the only way, I believe, the only way that the Knicks can continue to succeed is by making Amar'e Stoudemire the primary guy off the bench for them, along with J.R. Smith, because he'll get the same kinds of looks that he got when there was no Tyson Chandler in the lineup.
Let me ask you a question. And I think that goes, I think, honestly, you're 100% right. And I think a lot of people recognize that. I'm sure even Mike Woodson recognizes that.
Did you say 100% right or $100 million right?
100%.
But you got where I was going with the $100 million,
well,
too.
Well, it's not insured.
But it's still $100 million.
Oh, yeah, hell yeah, exactly. Would Amari's ego allow him to come off the bench? Everyone says, probably do what's right for the team, all that stuff.
Probably
whatever.
Not, and that's going to make it tough. But it was the same thing with Melo last season, and you saw the kind of season the Knicks barely made the playoffs last year, got ousted in the first round by the Heat. If Amar'e Stoudemire is smart, he's still going to get his money. He's still going to get his minutes.
Yep.
It's not about how you start.
It's how you finish.
And if you're in the game when it counts, that's all that matters.
And can you imagine?
Unless his contract is loaded with, like, starting bonuses or something.
But think about, like, how they are right now and how decent their bench is right now. Think of how serious their bets would be with him. You know what I mean?
Well, it depends on the rotations and who gets pushed out of the rotation as a result of him coming back. Is it Rashid that gets pushed out of the rotation? I think they play better with a Kurt Thomas or Rashid out there because they're going to be in the perimeter, and it allows Amari Stoudemire to be inside for dribble handoffs.
And they're also tougher defensively with Rashid and Kurt Thomas, too.
Yeah.
But you saw Marcus Camby. Like, you can't play him at center.
Nope.
But hey.
Camby will play on the perimeter because they did the same thing in Portland with him and LaMarcus Aldridge.
Well, first world problems.
Yeah, first world problems.
First team problems. I mean, they're the best in the East right now.
Yeah, and let's go to the West. We talked about Pau Gasol a little bit ago, and it's difficult because he doesn't know where to find his touches. I'd like to get more touches in the post. That's hard to do when you got a guy in Dwight Howard down.
Yeah, but you don't deserve touches when you're shooting. It's such an abysmal rate right now.
Well, they got him shooting jumpers. That's not his thing. Pau Gasol can shoot. Wait. All right. If he could, he'd be doing it. All I'm saying is he's a confident shooter, but that's not his consistent game. That's not who he is. And he's in the ninth inning of his career, too, so you can't change that player's game either. But here's the situation. In a Mike D'Antoni system, all you had to do was look at who was the primary big in Phoenix when they had success. Amari Stoudemire. Who else was down there in the box? Name it, quick.
In Phoenix?
Yeah. Who? Who was the other big?
I almost said Mark West.
Yeah, but I'm saying.
You're right.
Right.
Yeah, but they were small ball
teams. It's predicated on dribble penetration and kicks or screen and roll for the alley-oop dunk or the quick pass to Stoudemire to finish at the basket.
Yeah.
That's how that works. Because you got Dwight Howard in the lineup, Pau Gasol has been relegated to being who Sean Marion was, who played the four for Phoenix when he was there, if you remember.
Much, much quicker.
Sean Marion, he rebounded and he could hit the three-point shot. As ugly as that shot was, Sean Marion in those corners was knocking that shot when he was a 2010 guy back then.
Yeah.
But not Pau right now.
He's not Sean Marion-esque, but I do believe that Pau is a better jump shooter than he's shooting this season. He's shooting like what?
But I think it's one of those butthurt Lamar Odom type things where I can't play where I want to play. So
he got over that. I mean,
dude, why is he still talking about touches in the post? If that's not what the offense dictates, even though they were supposed to score more points in the free Mike D'Antoni system. But like I said, his system is rooted in having one primary big and shooters all around them. That's what it is. And that's not the situation they have in Los Angeles. So they got to fix. I mean, there are glaring holes in the system in Los Angeles. And we'll see how it plays out.
One thing is we can't, you know, cast the verdict yet because Steve Nash, the centerpiece of the offense, isn't available for them.
You sound like a Lakers fan. Of course.
That's like talking about any team and saying, like, okay.
I'm not knocking that. Of course you need to see what it looks like with Steve Nash, but it still doesn't negate the fact that Pau Gasol still has to find somewhere to play on this team. Yeah. And unless he comes off the bench, like we're talking about stat, and becomes the primary big then, it's different with Pau as the primary big. You saw him in the Olympics when he's the primary big.
So who would you insert in the starting lineup in his place? Anton Jameson?
He's the stretch four.
I know, but
he's terrible. I know he's old. He'll find some games. It's not how you start. It's how you finish. And if I'm not trying to give tips to LA to get better, of course, but it makes more sense based on how D'Antoni coaches. And his system, that if Powell's the primary big coming off the bench, then that takes away minutes for Jordan Hill.
Yeah.
Because Jordan Hill's not a perimeter four.
Oh, no. So, four in the paint.
And this is what I'm trying to say, is that the only way that works is if you take Pau Gasol out of the lineup and put Anton Jameson or somebody else in there as a four.
Well, but they'll figure it out.
Yeah. Well, one would hope, because they're getting exposed now, much like your man Jeremy Lin, who finally admitted, instead of saying that it was a racial vendetta, that he's been getting exposed like dog nuts by other guards.
Is that a quote?
Do you want me to read it for you? What exposed like dog nuts? Yeah. No, I threw that in.
Okay, sorry. Because if you said that, I'd be like, he has to pay his money.
No. Yeah, he does. Jeremy Lin's star point guard, Jeremy Lin, admitted that he's been exposed by NBA teams so far this season. After a very rocky start, he said, "I've been exposed a lot early on, and I have a lot to work on," according to the New York Post. "I'm young. I've started 30-something games my entire career. It's something I had to keep in mind. I felt better before, but it's just a process." So I'm like, okay, now you're admitting what we already knew? Come on, dog. Before it was a racial issue. Now it's, I've been getting exposed. Yeah, you got to play too. At the end of the day, you can put all of that parsley on the plate, but we see the steak.
Yeah, but I mean, is it a new story? I mean, he's admitting he's being exposed. Like, we knew before he had one game that he's being exposed. He had that great Lin Sanity stretch, And everyone is not going to fall for the okie-dokie anymore.
No.
And we said it before, he's thankful for James Harden.
Are the Philly fans thankful for Andrew Bynum? Wow. Ch-ch-ch-chia.
Wow.
Are they?
You know, it's kind of funny.
People were excited there about him coming.
Of course they were excited. I mean, as a Lakers fan, I'm so happy. And I was like, I don't know if it's, I mean, I'm not knocking Dwight Howard at all, but it's like.
But you knew he had knee issues when he came into the league at 18 years old.
Yeah, but from going from knee issues and missing like, you know, a handful of games each season to like not playing.
What about his, nobody named that former teammate who said Andrew Bynum doesn't like basketball.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they didn't come up. But they said, yeah, he works so little.
Right.
He doesn't even care.
On his game. He's just big. And he thinks that can get him over.
Well, it has got him over. But the little things like his attitude and
conditioning.
And the bowling. And I mean, you know.
So he can't go out and enjoy himself? He's got to sit at home because he's got an injury?
No, I didn't say he's got to sit at home. But if, you know, I mean, they're saying that they didn't know. But if that's, like, I got to think. If I can't play basketball right now, I'm not going to do anything. Even if it's bowling, that's
going
to put it at risk, right?
Right.
But that comes with his whole mindset, right? I mean, Kobe Bryant, for example, or LeBron James, if he had a knee injury, he's not going to be.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. But to compare Andrew Bynum to those two guys.
No, you're right. But that's the difference, though. I mean, they're where their heads are at. Like, he's athletically skilled. He has the gifts. But if he had half of what those guys have in terms of mindset and mentality and approach to the game, he would be stellar. I mean, that's not why his knees are bad, but.
When you talk about bad knees, let's go up to the land of 10,000 lakes and talk about Brandon Roy now needing another knee surgery. And I just kind of got to ask myself, I understand it. Maybe it's the same thing with Ricky Hatton, and maybe it's the same thing with Michael Finley, who's talking about trying to come back. Why?
Because he had to do it the way he wanted to, man.
Yeah, but if teams are taking chances and putting millions of dollars on the plate for somebody that you don't know, like, knee replacement is serious. This guy he barely has knees. And I know they really needed him when Kevin Love was out and Rubio still out. But they've been pretty competitive without
those guys. That was the time not to need him because he was just getting his NBA legs back, even though, like, you know, so, and he had a rough go. I mean, he had spots of okayness, but he was not looking like the Brandon Roy of old.
No.
And didn't have the quickness, didn't have the conditioning. And, you know, they've got a ton of your boy Josh Howard, you clown, is on the team again now.
Yeah, well, I mean, at least Josh Howard was on a roster last year, and at least he was playing some.
No, yeah, he was doing all right.
You know, and I think,
you know what, it's just like, he's still, I mean, you're right, he has no knees. The cartilage is gone.
That's it. It's just bone on bone now. And you look at, like, the injuries that are happening. Dirk Nowitzki still hasn't recovered from his knee injury.
Yeah.
And he's still talking. He's talking about, I think I'm going to play another couple years there. Dallas is done.
Why don't you worry about getting on the court this season before talking a long time?
Right, but that's, you know, maybe that's something to keep the Dallas fans interested or something.
Maybe.
But I'm all about the Jay Crowder era.
Yes, we know.
In Dallas. Shout out to my man Jay Crowder.
He got started the other night, too. He's back in the starting
rotation. I'm trying to tell you, that's my dude, man. But, you know, when dudes from Duke have beef, ain't it a little something different than
against every other one another or against anybody?
Against one another.
Oh boy!
When they have beef,
Duke on Duke crime.
If that's Duke on Duke crime, does that mean that Dookie from the Wire beat up Dookie from the Wire? Oh, you're talking about Duke University.
Well, when Duke on Duke crime consists of trash talking, I'm the better Jeopardy player than you are.
I love it. Oh, I went to Rice, so of course you know. I like that kind of battle. And in this situation, Mike Dunleavy, former Duke basketball player Mike Dunleavy, and former Dookie.
Not to be confused with Mike Dunleavy Sr.?
No, not at all. Mike Dunleavy Jr., should we say.
Thank you.
Versus Shane Battier in Jeopardy. I want in, though, because you need a third person.
Well, just to set it up, Shane Battier was just talking about the fact that intellectually, he's a very bright guy, and he feels that no one in the NBA can handle him in Jeopardy.
Wow.
And, you know, Dunleavy took umbrage to that and said, no, no, no.
Now, Shane Battier was a religion major.
That's right.
And Dunleavy was a history major.
Yep.
But I triple majored in managerial studies, political science, and economics. And I actually played for the College Jeopardy tournament when I was at Rice University. Won the campus tournament.
I've heard the story before.
Won the campus tournament. Won the state tournament. Won a regional tournament, and before we could go to L.A., because I was an NCAA student athlete, I was not allowed to go because before that it was just all about points. Then it became money. I couldn't win the money, even though it was a game show, because it would have been me earning.
Right.
So I didn't go to L.A. I should have taken that money. I should have taken it. But I wanted my degree. But Shane Battier, Mike Dunleavy, if y'all want some, we can make that happen. ABDB Enterprises.
There you go. Well, you said they need a third, right?
Right. Well,
Outstrebeck's Canadian. We should just make that happen.
Right? I know.
See?
Can you call your people?
I'll call my people. We don't have any Duke people to call to make that happen on their end.
I ain't worried about the Duke people. We can get people in the league. I call LeBron. Call LeBron. But what's never in jeopardy is a bad episode of All Balls Don't Bounce, man.
Episode 6-3.
Episode Fuzzy Thurston. Episode Leroy Selman.
You keep going with these names that people...
Leroy Selman from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who had that good barbecue sauce. We talked about it when he passed.
Yeah, we did.
See? I got this. We're going to post them. You're going to see it.
All right.
You're going to see it. Where can they find us, man?
They can see it all on Facebook at facebook.com/ABD Media. Definitely on Twitter at ABD Media. Email us if you have any issues, concerns, or if you think you got your Jeopardy game at allballsdontbounce@gmail.com.
Y'all don't want that.
Check us out on iTunes Store and as well stream us worldwide on Stitcher Radio.
Stitcher Radio! Yo, this was the second to the last show of the year.
And we're trying to work on a little something for the grand finale.
Ooh, for real. You
know, so
if we can make that happen.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, we're going to keep the fingers crossed. Y'all make sure to stick with us and as we wind it down. But for my man to my direct left.
You know, I know we're ending the show. But we had a little basketball run a little while ago with a bunch of friends. Why are you all defensive?
I'm not getting defensive.
We said, what are you trying to say? Like,
I was closing the show.
I know, but I just we didn't get a chance to like talk about
that. Well, let's talk about it.
It was fun. We had a good time. We had a bunch of cats that, you know, we found away friends and stuff.
Some media cats.
Yeah.
You know?
And we started out on opposing teams.
Yeah, as we do from time to time. And I always try to tell somebody else to guard me other than Dwayne.
Exactly. Yeah, and I was saying the same thing. Like, no, you bring her. I'm like, no, we do this all the time.
But then, you know, who's that big dude that
I don't know. I don't know who he is.
Yeah.
He got some of that work.
Woo, he got that work. Yeah, his shoestrings got tied and untied on several occasions.
But, you know. So you got me. I'm a friend. You got me on a tough J.
Come on, money.
Downtown.
NBA 3. From 30 feet.
That was behind the NBA 3.
Yeah, it was about 30 feet. I was already running down the court. I knew that was good.
Oh, that was a big shot.
Ooh.
I was right there, too.
He was. Yeah. He was, but, you know, release,
but then
rotation.
Splash.
Yes, sir.
Then they had to put it together, and then that was it.
Yeah, it was.
The two-man game was
They had to quit.
The two-man game put in retirement.
But it's what we do with your incredible two-man team of All Balls Don't Bounce. So, and now,
as you were.
For my man to the direct left.
Dwayne Sweets Watson.
I am the entrepreneur, Wall Street Will Strickland, letting you know, like I said, there's only one more show in the new year, or in this year. Before we go into the new one, our man Rich Kidd, our sonic architect, do what you do. All Balls Don't Bounce, part of the Gone Network. Easy.
Put your game face on, get ready for the tip-off. First pitch, puck drop, first swing, kickoff. Now your regular sports show, we bring the realest in the world of sports. You gotta hear it, see it, and feel it. On field, on court, wherever you're playing. Forget all the gimmicks, cause we're speaking on the game. Wall Street Strickland, E. Sweets Watson. Giving y'all the latest in sports, so what's popping? It's four corners of absolute rawness. If you ever need support, knowing who's on the court, you call. From the pop fly save to the Super Bowl phase, it's from the first round seed to the top of the league, you know it's